This is Gwendolyn Brooks, January 19th, 1961, reading from my own poems.
And this is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, July 11th, 2014. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, the poetry of close quarters. In 1945, the great Gwendolyn Brooks published her first book of poems, A Street in Bronzeville. It got a lot of attention for its vigorous formal qualities and for its intimate portraits of African Americans in a poor neighborhood. One short poem in the book stood out and still stands out. It's called Kitchenette Building, and it's one of the core poems in the Learning Lab section of the Poetry Foundation's website. And the poem guide for Kitchenette Building is written by Hannah Brooks Modell. Hannah's a poet and critic who lives in Chicago, where she joins me from the recording studio at the Poetry Foundation. Hannah, I know what a kitchenette is. I think I know what it is. It's a small little kitchen. But what's a kitchenette building? That's not a phrase that we use here in New York. Maybe it's a Chicago expression.
Yeah, well, I think it was definitely an expression when Gwendolyn Brooks was living and writing. So a kitchenette building was a building of apartments that had been sort of carved up into smaller and smaller units. And so bathrooms were often communal. So there were sometimes three or four families sharing a bathroom. And as more and more African Americans came to the city for work, a kind of unofficial segregation policy ensued. And so there were more people than there was housing. And so kitchenette buildings became a way for landlords to accommodate people but also make a profit, so they would charge high rents for these tiny places.
Hmm. Gwendolyn Brooks, though, grew up in Chicago's South Side. She grew up in a house in Chicago. So what's her connection with a kitchenette apartment?
Well, she moved into her first kitchenette apartment when she married.
Uh-huh.
So she lived in a kitchenette for the first few years of her marriage, and it's a situation or an environment or an architecture that is in a lot of her work up through the 60s when she was no longer living in kitchenettes. So her long poem, In the Mecca, is set in a building, which was an actual building in Chicago, the Mecca.
So she didn't marry up.
No. But her husband was also a writer. He didn't publish as much, but he was very supportive of her career and her work.
Okay, let's listen to it. Here is Gwendolyn Brooks reading in 1961.
Kitchenette Building. We are things of dry hours and the involuntary plan. Grayed in and gray. Dream makes a giddy sound. Not strong, like rent, feeding a wife, satisfying a man. But could a dream send up through onion fumes its white and violet, fight with fried potatoes and yesterday's garbage ripening in the hall, flutter or sing an aria down these rooms? Even if we were willing to let it in, had time to warm it, keep it very clean, anticipate a message, let it begin. We wonder, but not well, not for a minute. Since number 5 is out of the bathroom now, we think of lukewarm water. Hope to get in it.
That's just a wonderful last rhyme, not for a minute, with hope to get in it.
Yeah.
And by the way, I always thought when I read this poem, until I heard you just say what you said, I always thought that number 5 was child number 5 or something like that. Like she had a very credit. But she's actually referring to apartment number 5.
Right,
They share a bathroom.
Right.
Well, that's quite a few people sharing a bath. But let's go back to the beginning of the poem and the first magnificent line.
We are things of dry hours and the involuntary plan.
That sounds a bit like T.S. Eliot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. We are things of dry hours and the involuntary plan has a kind of stateliness to it. But when she reads it, and I was struck listening to this recording last night, how wry she is.
Yes.
And
casual.
And casual, right. Involuntary plan is a definite contradiction, right? A mm-hmm. plan is kind of by nature being a plan,
right?
Not involuntary. And a dry hour, you know, I don't know what a wet hour would be. So I think that they're sort of like poetic flourishes, but they do set up the theme and they kind of allow for reversals to eventually happen in the poem. So we start dry and we end wet.
We are things of dry hours and the involuntary plan. Grayed in and gray.
And the grayed in and gray because kitchenettes sort of reappear in her body of work, you can kind of track some of the themes that start in this poem. And Graydon and Gray, in her kind of semi-autobiographical novel, Maud Martha, she has this long rhapsody on gray and how living in this kitchenette building, sounds are gray. The sounds of, you know, people having sex next door are gray. Hmm. Smells are gray. So it's as if this color just kind of, it's a weird kind of synesthesia that sort of takes over. And here I took it to mean also that, you know, people kind of are blending into one another, that your sort of sense of where you end and the next person's sounds or smells or comings and goings begin is a little hazy, a little gray, a little blurry.
Dream makes a giddy sound, not strong like rent, feeding a wife, satisfying a man.
Dream, in quotes, she says that. What does she mean by here by dream? Does she mean aspirations? Does she mean creative life? What do you make of that word dream?
Yeah, well, I think the fact that it's in quotes is very telling, and it's followed by language also in quotes, which I take to be sort of overheard speech. So,
yeah.
There's the sense that, you know, this is a word that doesn't belong in this poem. That's one thing I think the quotes are doing. It's a word that is incredibly vague and abstract, especially when you compare it to the very, like, kind of concrete details that we get later on.
But could a dream send up through onion fumes its white and violet, fight with fried potatoes and yesterday's garbage ripening in the hall, flutter or sing an aria down these rooms? Even if we were willing to let it in, had time to warm it, keep it very clean, anticipate a message, let it begin.
Now, that's a question in the poem, but the way she reads it, doesn't have a question intonation to it, and it's really a rhetorical question, is it not?
When I was listening to it, I feel like she puts the question mark at the end of the second stanza.
Fight with fried potatoes and yesterday's garbage ripening in the hall.
I heard the question kind of float through the lines in ways that I didn't when I was reading it. Because it goes on for seven lines, you forget that you're in a question. And I think the intent of this poem kind of depends on whether you think it's a rhetorical question or not.
To put it pretty simply or bluntly, really, isn't she saying, can dreams survive this kind of poverty and oppression?
Yes, yeah.
You know, and then the onion fumes, the fried potatoes, the garbage ripening in the hall, these are not nice conditions.
No, definitely not.
I read it as a rhetorical question, and it seems to me the answer is no, that she posits in the poem. But the curious part of this passage is,
even if we were willing to let it in, had time to warm it, keep it very clean, anticipate a message, let it begin.
We're not necessarily willing to let in these hopes and dreams. It suggests that we're not even going to open that door.
Right, right.
So it seems to be a profoundly pessimistic poem at this point.
Maybe not pessimistic. I mean, maybe it's frank.
Right.
It's sort of realistic. And that even if we were willing to let it in, had time to warm it, that's a way of maybe keeping the poem, keeping the we in the poem safe from all of the demands that sort of spin out of letting the dream into the kitchenette apartment, wanting more, wanting different.
The final stanza is somewhat ambiguous in its answer to this question that the poem raises.
We wonder, but not well, not for a minute. Since number 5 is out of the bathroom now, we think of lukewarm water, hope to get in it.
So the residents don't spend much time wondering about whether their material conditions are squashing their dreams. They have an eye on more immediate concerns like getting a bath.
Right.
This last stanza has such a cheerful bounce to it, especially with the wit of that last rhyme, not for a minute,
right,
and hope to get in it. So what do you make of that? Is it a positive poem or negative poem? What do you make of it?
I don't know that it's either. You know, I think that we want a poem to either say, like, poetry can overcome oppression, or, you know, the social forces quash all. And, you know, the poem sort of resolutely, and I think in this last stanza, it almost kind of makes fun of us for wanting or thinking that there can be a definitive answer to that question or a definitive tone to take. You know, that a kind of political poem has to be very serious or it has to be beleaguered. You're right that the wit in this final stanza is pretty amazing, and it's pretty funny.
It's buoyant
as well.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she, you can tell she's amused when you heard her read it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. She is amused. And I mean, I think that we think of lukewarm water. So the we wonder and then we think are kind of interesting oppositions of verbs that happen there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that what they're thinking of is a kind of tepid, like, compound. But it's also not cold, you know.
No, it actually sounds pretty inviting in the poem, the lukewarm water.
It sounds like better than dry hours.
Yes, yes. It does sound better than that. So one of the answers to this poem that this question raises is probably the poem itself, that it actually was written. She lived in a kitchenette building, and onerous as it may have been, she did manage to dream up this poem.
And I think to show that fried potatoes, onion fumes are things that are at a poet's disposal. And so you see her using everything around her.
Even the rotting garbage.
Right.
Okay, Hannah, thanks so much.
Sure.
You can read Hannah Brooks Modell's poem guide and dozens of other poem guides in the Learning Lab section of the Poetry Foundation's website. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.